You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
So there I was, just running through the woods, minding my own fucking business. Next thing I know, I'm up to my ass in like fucking cow intestines. I've been blown up. It looks like I was in a meth accident, and no one believes me. I don't understand. I mean, my story's completely plausible. There's no way in hell anyone wouldn't believe this story. But you know what it is, you know, you just can't trust anybody these days. If you meet folks in the woods, just mind your own fucking business, learn from my mistakes, and just don't ever go outside, ever. Because the outside is terrible, people want to kill you, there are mad crazy hillbillies, and there's too many fucking people who have not seen Deliverance, okay? If you've seen Deliverance, that tells you, don't go in the fucking woods. You see some hillbillies doing some crazy shit, you don't go and follow them. You just stay away. So here I am in a hospital somehow talking to you even though I'm completely covered in burns and everybody thinks I'm a meth head. This is not unusual. The only difference is I'm doing it remotely. Otherwise, I would be in a room with you guys covered in burns talking about this movie we just saw. Which, by the way, I suppose we should introduce. We are, of course, talking about a brand new horror film called Ravage by writer-director Teddy Grennan, and joining me here is another hot crew of hillbilly massacring maniacs. I have got Santiago.
Hello.
I got Wright.
Hell yeah, brother.
And I've got Adrian.
Hey, y'all. I'm definitely not a redneck cannibal or hillbilly killer.
And of course, I'm Marco, the evil guy who likes to talk way too much, giving you plenty of time to kill me, but you won't because you're a fool.
I wouldn't have gone outside.
Yeah, I just stay the fuck home, man. Just never go outside ever again. To kind of give us a quick synopsis of the film we just saw, I'm going to hand the mic over to Adrian.
Yeah, so I wanted to take over giving the synopsis for this because I wanted to give enough without giving too much. The movie basically is about a woman named Harper who is an investigative journalist. While on a run, she sees something really fucked up, kind of looks like a shot out of some kind of Resident Evil game, and she takes photographs of the people doing it. After this, she gets hunted down by those same pursuers. Well, actually, no. She tries to go to the cops, but as you should expect in other movies where you're kind of stuck in the backwoods of a rural area, you can't really trust the cops or the sheriff either. So she's getting hunted down by these hillbilly, racist, all sorts of banjo stereotypes you could think. This group of them who want her dead for what she saw. And I don't want to say a lot, but there is some stuff that needs to be very clear. This, at its very core, is a 70s exploitation film, and a hardcore 70s exploitation film. I would say it's in the subcategory of rape revenge movies. Now, unfortunately, if just that is enough for you to not want to see that movie, that's totally cool and understandable. However, if you're worried at how graphic that may be, I'm happy to say that they actually don't show any of that. They make it clear that it's going to happen, but then they cut away. And I kind of congratulate the film on doing that, because a lot of 70s exploitation movies shows it way too much, and this one thankfully does not.
This movie is almost tasteful as fuck.
Almost.
It's actually quite beautifully shot. It's all shot on location in the Virginia Wachitumi Valley, which is a very remote place. It's very beautiful, but if you're in the middle of it, miles away from anywhere on foot, yeah, you're going to have a hard time. And to Adrian's point, it's there's a reason why I mentioned Deliverance. This does feel like a throwback to old 70s exploitation cinema. Deliverance, I know, isn't an exploitation film. It's a much bigger budget film. But it kind of has that same vibe of, like, you know, you have this sort of, I don't want to say elite, but, you know, someone from polite society. It's established that our lead, who I think is well portrayed by an actress I'm not too familiar with, Annabelle Dexter-Jones. She's a wildlife photographer of some note. She's out exploring this place and taking beautiful pictures, and she sees something she shouldn't see, which of course sets off a chain reaction. And it's gorgeous to look at. But there was is this really a horror movie? Because that's how it's billed as. By the end of the movie, I thought she was more like John Rambo in First Blood.
Right. I think, to like Adrian's point, it's more of like the rape revenge of exploitation movies in the 70s, because it definitely has a I Spit on Your Grave vibe, but it doesn't go to the exploitative lengths that like those kind of movies did. And it also brings to mind a movie that came out just a couple years ago that, quite honestly, I think it did a lot of this better, even though it is much more graphic, is Revenge.
Yes.
And
I was thinking about that too.
It's, yeah. And to your point, it is shot really well. It's just that it feels like the budget was some of its limitations and what it could show. There was some times, and obviously this the protagonist, she's actually on Succession. On HBO.
Okay.
She's a great character in that show. But that's why I was like, oh yeah, it's her. She's very resourceful. Let's just say that, not to give too much spoilers of how she is going to protect herself, and you know, she's not really going for much vengeance. She's just basically trying to protect herself from these guys trying to kill her. And there are points that when she is taking out some of these other, you know, random guys on motorcycles, I was watching it carefully just to see if they would go to those lengths, and they don't necessarily. They're just so, like to what you were saying earlier, they show the aftermath, if anything.
Yeah, I mean, the impression is that she's too soft for this kind of shit, that she's easy pickings, and that it's going to be a huge sort of stretch for her to kind of become this, like I said, like this sort of John Rambo-like figure laying out booby traps and stalking guys in the woods, even when times she doesn't necessarily have to. That's one of the things I found frustrating, because at one point she takes out a guy. I'm like, okay, that's a really weird way you took that guy out. You could have he didn't know you were there. You could have kept going. And he had his horse, but you didn't take the horse to ride out of the valley. And then later on, you take out a guy with a motorcycle, and you take the helmet, but not the motorcycle. And it started to feel like, you know, that old joke about the guy who was about to drown and kept, like, denying all assistance because he said God was going to save him, and then he dies and goes to heaven. And God's like, look, I sent you a boat, I sent you a helicopter, and you still died.
It's called not the best writing.
It's like, why didn't she just get on the bike and get the fuck out? Even if it was a bad idea, because the bad guys would have expected that. It's still, I think, what that character would have done. But at some point, you know, Aiden's right. They kind of switch her. She becomes an action hero. This is much more, for the bulk of the movie, it's really just the 5 billionth iteration of The Most Dangerous Game, with a character who is trying to outwit a better armed opponent, tracking them through a dense wood or jungle.
Yeah.
Santiago, you've been kind of quiet. Did you have any thoughts on what while you were watching this?
I feel like you hit the nail on the head as far as not good writing, right? Because I feel like whoever wrote like the specifics of the scenes, I feel like they conceived them, they thought of them before they had written out any of the plot. It's like they were like, I want, you know, this guy to die in this manner, and And I'm not really sure how I'm going to get there, but damn it, I tell you, I'm going to get there. And I feel like they kind of take a lot of risks in getting there. And I'm not going to go into specifics, but I think that it happens most whenever she's going through the team of wraiths that, you know, by the way, just like appropriately, like, don't say much. I have to admit, I really liked the fact at first it was kind of thwarting, but some of the guys in this movie, like, kind of just like scream gibberish and seem like total animals and seem almost like not human, which rightly so made me think, like, God, I can't wait to watch these people die. And I think that the writer also, like, kind of wanted to watch these people die too. He wanted to watch them die in very specific types of ways. And mind you, it was done quite beautifully. Adrian mentioned that it was done beautifully. I don't think I've ever seen people die as pretty as they do in this movie. And the references to Rambo are, I couldn't be more apt. There were scenes in this movie where I was like, holy shit, this is like directly from fucking Predator. Like, this is like an exact ripoff of a scene from Predator.
Here's the thing that I find frustrating about it. And when one of you pointed out that, you know, most of the other characters, most of her, let's just say the antagonist, are written pretty one-dimensionally. It's clear, like, you know, crazy meth head guy, you know, weird sadist guy. And we do have a big bad. And this was my number one complaint about the movie, is I'm really tired of seeing a bunch of crazy rednecks, except for that one guy who's cultured and smart, and he wants to tell you exactly what he's up to, because we've left out an important detail in our sort of lead up to this. This movie has an interesting time structure in the sense that it opens in the present, where our character, Harper, is in a hospital completely covered in bandages with burns over like 90% of her body. She's telling this insane story about what happened to her. She's being interviewed by like a state trooper or police officer or something. And he's like, everybody's writing her story off. They're like, look, she's just some crazy meth head who had her works just blow up in her face. And now she's come up with this bullshit story to get out of it. And she's clearly mentally, you know, unstable or hopped up on drugs. That's why she's telling us this bullshit story about all these dudes she had to kill. And of course, the film will then cut to the past and move forward again. It's this film has a beginning and ending that I think are weak, and a middle that's actually pretty fucking good. And that's frustrating.
That's a really good point, because if you think about it, like, the narration or just her telling story does not need to be in it at all.
No.
And the end, and like that buffering of time could have led to like what ended up happening to her. Cause we were all talking about that. It's not necessarily ambiguous ending, but it basically opens up a lot of questions about, okay, well, how in the world did she actually get to the point where she's telling the story? Because it leaves it to where you're like, well, how the holy hell is she going to get out of this one? And it's very frustrating. Yeah. I was also going to say, I feel bad because there is one fantastic actor in it. Bruce Dern makes more or less a cameo in the movie, and it is... It's so like he does not need to be in this at all.
I disagree with that. I think he was really good in this. I thought his cameo was fantastic. And if you're going to have someone for a small role like that and you can get Bruce Dern, why not, man? Like it totally worked for this film, I would say.
I'm actually shocked they got him to do this.
Right. I get it from like the filmmaker standpoint that he was able to get like, you know, Oscar nominated legend Bruce Dern in the movie, but the character doesn't really need to be there at all. If you're looking at it from like strictly just a screenplay standpoint and storytelling, is like, well, yeah, it was there to kind of give some like pause and just like, okay, let's calm down real quick. Cause the movie is, I would say, fairly quick. Like, it doesn't really slow down at all. It's very
about 90 minutes long.
Yeah. So it is like ramping up all the time. So you don't ever really feel bored. And I'm not saying that scene was boring. It's more just like, oh, we need to have some time where she could just sit down and talk to someone. And I must say, like, some of his dialogue, whether he was talking about, you find out he's a bad guy as well, whatever. But he is talking about, like torture. And I was just, I think we were talking about earlier is like, oh, so he read some Wikipedia article about something else. It was like, oh God.
It just felt too on the nose. And you already had one character doing that. To have a second character do it, I was like, dude, I get it. You researched a bunch of weird ways to kill people and you thought it was fascinating and you wanted to talk about it. Because that character just feels like he's there to deliver exposition and some thematic content. Because again, it's there are some good things in this movie, which is why it makes it frustrating that it couldn't be better. These aren't a bunch of just dumb hicks, even though some of the characters appear that way. They have a reason for why they're doing this.
And their motivation is really good. It's actually kind of well thought out.
Right. Until, you know, the head honcho, played by Robert Longstreet, he shows up and he just does everything but twirl his mustache. It's like, okay, now you're just going to monologue. You've got her tied up. You could easily kill her. But no, you're going to monologue for at length and give her plenty of time to kill you. But she's not going to do that because obviously the movie's not over yet. It's really frustrating to see a very good actor who's playing a role to the hilt, but it is a role that is way overridden. Adrian, why don't you go ahead and go first and give us your final thoughts?
So this is a movie that by all means has everything that I'm kind of looking for in a 70s throwback exploitation movie like this. It doesn't hold anything back, yet it's not overly grotesque and it's not disgusting. It's actually pretty well made. And I would say that, like I mentioned earlier, even though the kills aren't specifically gory, just the mechanics behind it and the way that the main character came up with it is worth watching. I thought that was brilliant. However, this movie just decides to kind of drop the ball at the end. And I'm not sure if everybody's going to have that reaction, but I definitely had that reaction. This movie felt like it had a lot to say and then kind of ended. It kind of felt like it won the argument because it started yelling. And that's kind of just how I felt about the movie overall.
That's how I win every argument, Adrian.
It could have been something really great, especially if you love this genre, especially if you love genre horror like this. But it just sadly falls flat. But I'm still looking forward to anything that this director does. I would say check it out. And I'm going to give it 3.5. Oh, man. I'm so bad at it. I always forget to think of a rating. But okay. I'm going to give this 3.5 Resident Evil games that I would like to see made from this.
Out of 5?
Out of 5, sorry, yeah.
Okay, out of 5. Either is fine. Just give us some context, because I was like, he actually sounded like he kind of liked it. And I'm like, damn, 3.5, that's bad. But 3.5 out of 5, not bad at all. Santiago, why don't you give us your final thoughts?
You know, I think people of all walks of life will have something to enjoy in this film. It's scary, but confusing. It's cool, but alluring. I don't know. I have to admit, like, this movie was something I hadn't really seen anything like in a while, so it was cool and neat. I thought that the sequences with, like, the strong, like, audio was cool, but that, as Adrian said, it was edited pretty badly. Almost, like, hokey to a point, but that being said, I do actually really want to point out the performance of the Ravener, the Marco Simmons.
Robert Longstreet character.
Yeah, I thought that guy was, like, probably the most appropriately depraved character in this film. Like, he was just really sick and scary and disgusting, and I just really liked him. but other than that, I thought that I would agree with Wright that Bruce Dern's name is on this for really no reason that I can understand. I even saw movie posters where it had the main character's name and then also Bruce Dern's name, but nobody else's, which I thought that was interesting because I also thought that Bruce Dern's character could just be written off, but it was like a nice icing on the cake. This movie was, I think, sloppy for me. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 acid brines out of a cow's butt.
Okay. All right. Right, what do you got to say?
There's a few things that I do like about the movie. I think that the score, which we haven't talked about, I thought was actually really good. It reminds me a lot of new synth wave that's been coming, like having a resurgence in a lot of horror movies as of late. I would say mainly due for, you know, John Carpenter starting all that, and then a lot of different artists from Carpenter Brut to Deadly Avenger. But the cinematography was pretty good for, you know, the budget they had, and I thought the actors were, you know, pretty good. The lead actress, I thought she was great. We were talking about earlier that, I think before we're recording, that I have a big issue with Your Next, and the how Adam Wingard writes off that character, and I know people will argue against me, that they kind of write her off in, like, two sentences, where she just basically grew up on a some kind of like doomsday kind of camp with her father, and just like learned all these things. With the lead character in this movie, it seemed a little bit more appropriate and a little bit more believable. I don't know why, but it almost went to the point where it was Your Next, and I was like starting to get irritated. It was just like, oh, she's just a badass because she does all this photography across the world, and she just learned all these things. And that just seemed a little bit more believable with some of the tactics she was taking out all these guys. So there was a lot of things that I think we've all talked about that were almost just, it was just irritating, because you just, like, you see this really, like, kind of good story, this, like, good movie, like this middle half where the beginning and the end just kind of like falter, and you want it to be more. Like, it's funny, I haven't wished for a movie to be better than it is, and that seems kind of harsh, but I really hope that before they do release the movie, they kind of go back and just edit a few things, hopefully mix the audio, if that is the case, where, you know, Bruce Dern, that's just the final audio they have for him, but I hope they are able to fix it. Just a few things, some editing choices here and there, but the only other thing I wish they did was that the big bad, I wish that he was just a little bit more cool rather than just being, you know, chewing up the scenery like crazy. It was a little too much for me. But in the end, I will give this 3 out of 5 happy cows that have no idea what's about to happen to them.
Does any cow ever really know what's about to happen
to them?
That's
very true.
They're not very smart. They're not quite bright. But yeah, I'm going to echo what a lot of you guys have already said. There's a lot that's good here. This guy, Teddy Grennan, this is not his first rodeo, but it's his first time as a writer-director, at least as a feature length. And I'm really interested to see what he's got next up his sleeve, because there's some good stuff here. And he's obviously put together a good team and has a good eye for talent. But unfortunately, I think this sort of clunky bookend device, let's just say, I don't want to go into spoilers, left me unsatisfied, because what's happening in the middle of the film is really, really interesting and well done. And I think in particular, as I said, the actress who plays Harper, Annabelle Dexter Jones, I mean, she kind of gets to be Rambo / Ellen Ripley here. It's almost that level where you're like, oh, this is a character who's written to be like a damsel in distress, but then they surprise you because it's revealed that they actually know what the fuck they're doing. And that doesn't mean they wipe everybody's ass, you know, right away. It's like, no, she suffers. She gets hurt. She makes mistakes. But we see her develop. We see that character thinking and figuring out ways to outsmart all of these opponents. And so when we get to that ending, I'm just really disappointed, because what they had sold me in the middle was not what I got at the end. And that left me feeling really disappointed. This is a really good sandwich slammed between two pretty mediocre, stale, moldy pieces of bread. And take away the bookend pieces, then maybe you got something better, you know? Eat that wild style. Eat it, you know? Maybe, what is that? That's like That's like the diet version, you know, just remove the bun, you know, eat the hamburger, remove the bun.
It's the keto version of the movie.
Yeah, that's the keto version. I'm going for the keto cut. Cut out the beginning and the end and just enjoy that juicy middle. And then you're going to get a pretty fucking good movie with a little bit of cheese on it, but not too much. Yeah, it's only disappointing to the extent that what was there in the middle was so damn good. But I would be happy to see this particular group of actors and director and writer do some more work in this genre, because I think they obviously have what it takes. They just needed to do another draft or two on this particular screenplay. But it's probably too late for that. I have to give this... Oh, I'm going to give this 6 out of 10... old man nose hairs from Bruce Dern, because he's 80 fucking years old and he doesn't give a shit anymore. Oh my God, full nose hair. You gotta love an actor who's reached that point. It's like, I'm Bruce fucking Dern, I'm 80 years old, I'm playing an old coot, I'm going coot all the way. His nostrils have beards. That's probably why the audio was so bad. You know, that was probably like interfering with the way he could speak, because his nostrils are just clogged with hair. You know, I can't.
You can see it too, because he's the only person who gets a steady nose. Nose camera, but just a steady camera in the entire film. The whole thing is spastic, moving all over the place. But once we get to Dern, it's like we're sitting on a stand, staring him right in the face for a headshot, and he's smiling right back at us with his glass of booze. Like, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's not a mistake. You know, it's not like a continuity error or something that no one noticed until it was too late. They're like, no, we all saw that in the monitor.
You know what, Bruce? I'm glad it was you.
Yeah, and he's just like, I don't fucking care.
They paid extra for the nose hairs.
Well, you know, by the way, I just want to let you know, I have a new job. I am going to be a nose hair fluffer for the independent film industry. I start tomorrow. I can't wait to trim Jack Nicholson's nose hairs.